Now, a year ago this month, Maria Walsh completed the journey from Rose of Tralee winner to MEP for Midlands North West, and she joins me now on the line to discuss the year and everything else. Good afternoon, Maria.
Good afternoon, and I must say, Ray, that quiz was quite competitive. I have team members of mine. I've a girl in Kent, someone in Meath, and two in Brussels that are fighting over who got what score. And so I'm glad it ended when it did. Otherwise, I'll have no one at work tomorrow.
So you're back home in Shrewell, County Mayo.
I am. I came home, like many of the thousands, in I think it was the 14th of March. And much like one of the quiz masters there, I arrived at the front door of my parents' house and haven't left since. But they're getting benefits out of it too. They have someone home, and my dad entered into some lambing, so I was an extra pair of hands to help out too.
Okay. Hey, so you tell me, remind me now of your where you've lived in your life. So it was Ireland originally, was it?
Yeah, American born, raised, born in Boston, Massachusetts, and then moved when I was seven with my family to the Mayo side of Shrewell, County Mayo, just on the border between Mayo and Galway. And all my schooling, college days were done in Ireland. And then I found myself in New York City in my early 20s, and then in Philadelphia for about 4.5 years. And then right after this little festival called the Rose of Tralee happened at the end of 20, I won in 2014 and represented the class then, and moved home officially in 2015 and have been living in Ireland since. And right now, while I'm remote working into Brussels, I'm physically in County Mayo.
Yeah. And it was that year as the Rose of Tralee that awoken your interest in politics, was it?
Yeah, reminiscent of when we first met on the stages in Cork, I think it was, in 2004, around No Name Club, a youth organisation for anybody listening.
Were you in that competition as well?
I was one of your interviewees. I was a hostess of the year that year. And actually, I grew up in a household that was always around developing communities and community and social injustices. But the Rose year really just, like many of our international Roses, or Roses and Escorts in general would tell you, it just opens your eyes to our diaspora, you know, issues that you want to impact at local level, the fact that we have outstanding leaders across our communities, and you just want to help out as best as you can from there.
Yeah. So you were always destined, really, for public life, weren't you? What was it? I always wondered what attracted people to that. Why would you put yourself forward, say? Because that, just to tell people, the No Name Club.
Yeah, well, a year on, there's moments where I've questioned that too. but for me, it's a case if the Rose year. I mean, if you look at that, it gave me a podium to use my voice and my views. For me, it was a comfortable space because I was passionate about making change. And I think that's where public life, why it draws people in, that they see something that they want to fix or want to be a part of a bigger family of leadership. And that's why you put your hand up and get involved. And for me, a year ago when I made the decision to run, it was a case of armchair activism just didn't fulfill me anymore. I wanted to get off, and I actually wanted to put my hand up and be at the dinner table of conversation versus outside trying to get in. And that really was the turning point for me.
You would have canvassed for the marriage referendum, which 5 years, it's hard to believe, isn't it? It's 5 years ago.
I know. And then, weekend. I mean, when you think that Ireland here, we got asked, me as a person, the fact that it was marriage referendum and then repeal the eighth, got asked the two biggest questions that I think any generation could have faced. And there was pros and cons to either side. And it really sparked this citizens' dialogue that I think we are missing. And hopefully with Brexit, with COVID-19 right now, people are reaching out and seeing the impact that their voice has in the community. Yeah. I even right now are, like many GAA clubs around the country, mine in Shrewell and Corrib is helping out deliveries to local supermarkets to community members that are older, like are cocooning or might have COVID-19, and that's groceries or medications or whatnot. And they've done 200 deliveries, and that's just such a small part of active citizenship. So the referendums really brought that on, and long may it last. I think that's where we really need to protect
And Maria, just remind me how the going for the European elections happened. Were you approached by Fine Gael, or what happens? Do you express an interest?
No, it was very much a two-way street. I gifted myself in 2018 a birthday gift of a one-day seminar with Women for Election that was held in Dublin City Centre. Again, it was just something I wanted to, before I really threw my name in the hat and started talking to people, I kind of wanted to educate myself on what the certain words meant and what quotas mean and what, you know, what tallies mean and all that jazz. And the Women for Election really gave me the grounding for that. And it built from there. And I found myself in 5051 Upper Mount Street and the relationship began.
Blossomed.
And it's been a turbulent year. It's been great. Hard to believe that we're nearly a year on Friday.
Yeah. And you got 64,000 first preference votes, which is
a huge
mandate
for someone who didn't grow up in party politics, who didn't, you know, obviously because you're so new into, I think anybody experience a new job would be thrown off at the magnitude of the job description. For me, I was trying to cover as many towns and villages across the constituency, trying to talk about things that are passionate, like mental health or rural development, or the fact that young people like me need to get involved in politics. Otherwise, nothing changes. We built a great army, dare I say, that really delivered that message, and we got to see the fruits of that labour in this time last year.
And when you think about 64,000 people looking at the ballot paper and seeing your name and your picture and putting the tick beside it, a pressure must come with that, does it?
It does.
A responsibility.
It does. You know, there was pressure leaving the house the morning we went to vote because, you know, my whole family came to vote with me, and I thought I was kind of counting them, making sure they were going to give me their number one, like anybody else. But there is a pressure to that, and more so that, you know, it's, when people run for election of any kind, and that I mean not just at a European level or general election, I'm talking like even parents' councils or school, you know, anything like that, there is a weight of that you want to deliver on the job that people are
behind you to do. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, we delivered on it.
How many MEPs are there?
13.
In all Europe, do you know?
In all of Europe, 751.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and 27 member states, and a lot of compromises and negotiations and culture changes. For us here, you know, I talk about LGBTQI rights and mental health all the time in the European Parliament, whereas in other countries it might not be at the tip of their tongue as much as it would be for mine or many of our other Irish MEPs. So it's a big challenge, but I'm enjoying it.
And you mentioned mental health twice now. How do you feel the mental health services are in Ireland before we go to Europe?
Yeah, in Ireland, in many ways, we are really leading the way in certain settings. Like I've been keeping an eye, and I've worked with Jigsaw for many years around their preventative care. So there's aspects of it to it, but there is certainly, when we talk about the elephant of mental health and taken bit by bit, there's never enough money spent or never enough focus on mental health. And I think COVID-19 has really opened up the eyes to everybody that didn't feel mental health belonged at the conversation table. And for me, even in the last couple of weeks around government formations on a national front, while I sit in the European Parliament, I do keep an eye, obviously, on national politics because it affects my constituents. So pushing and constantly encouraging the mental health message is integral, because if you don't, and if we continue on the finger pointing, well, you do this and you do that and we can't include that, well, then it's our citizens that lose out at the end of the day. So
unfortunately,
that's the piece that we need to change.
A lot of our citizens are losing out when it comes to mental health services. What did you feel about seeing your leader topless in Phoenix Park?
Well, in one sense, I was jealous of the tan he was developing. in the other sense, I was raging that something like the Phoenix Park is outside my 5K radius. But I'm fortunate in rural Ireland, and I'm sure you know we have plenty of fields like that. But he was adhering to social distancing. He was with his partner and two close friends. So outside of that, I think he was just living a human life. You know, I think we put politicians and himself on a different pedestal, when in actual fact that was him probably giving himself some mental health time.
Yeah. Do you think he knew the photograph was going to appear in the paper?
Probably not. Probably not. I think it's given everybody, particularly the politicians, myself included, a different, when we go sunbathing, we just need to be mindful of who's around. But again, not to bring the seriousness to it, it's amazing what the impact of social media has now. Yes. in terms of capturing,
Maria,
even people who are off.
We've run out of time. I'd love if, when we get to the other side of this, you'd come in for a longer chat. And, you know,
I'd love that.
Mind yourself,
yeah,
and stay safe. Thanks, Maria.
Same to you. Mind yourself.
Bye now. Bye.